Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Bobby Finger.
And I'm Lindsay Weber. Our podcast, Who Weekly, is everything you need to know about the celebrities you don't. Think of us as your cheat code to People Magazine, your glossary for Hollywood, a shortcut to understanding pop culture at large.
For the past 8 years, Who Weekly has been telling listeners everything they need to know about the celebrities they don't.
Who Weekly airs twice weekly with brand new episodes on Tuesdays and Fridays. Listen and follow Who Weekly, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03, Thursday afternoon, April 10th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart. The largest pop culture convention in the Midwest, the Chicago Comic and Entertainment Expo, opens tomorrow. We'll take a look at this year's festivities in our next segment. But first, on the economic front, President Trump pauses some tariffs for 90 days while consumer prices fall for the first time in nearly 5 years. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Bob Bruska, Chief Economist, Fact and Opinion Economics, based in New York. Bob, thank you for joining us today. And we talked about a 90-day pause in most of the tariffs that were rolled out by the White House last week. And of course, the markets reacted strongly to them. But it seems like investors had some time to take a look at the fine print today.
Well, I think there's still a lot of concern about this thing on China with these massive tariffs. You know, I heard one report today that said that Chinese ships en route to the U.S. would be throwing product overboard. And that sounds a little extreme, but understand the tariffs now are over 100%. So they're going to have to pay more to get the goods into the country than the goods are worth. And so why would you finish the trip and deliver them? So the tariffs that are that large just are really a tremendous game changer.
I mean, I was going to say, Bob, effectively, that basically shuts down bilateral trade between the U.S. and China.
Yeah, except for, if the economists have a term called inelastic, right? There may be some goods that you just have to buy no matter what their price is. Demand for them may be inelastic. You know, if you're making a car and you're sourcing some part from China that you can't get anyplace else, well, if you have to pay through the nose for it, you'll pay through the nose for it. You know, but if you were having left shoes made in Vietnam and right shoes made in China, you'd pay the tariff on the right shoe because you can't sell a left shoe without a right shoe, right? So it's that kind of thing. There may be some specific goods that will come in despite the ridiculous tariffs, but they're pretty ridiculous, and we'll see. I mean, Trump did this on purpose. He realizes that they're ridiculous, and we'll see where this goes now, because China has some ridiculous things it could do because there are U.S. firms operating in China for which China could take very specific, very hostile actions because of this. So, what goes around comes around.
Now, let's pick up a storyline from an earlier season, as it were, Bob, and talk about inflation. Consumer prices fell for the first time in nearly 5 years, the CPI dipping 0.1% in March, 2.4% on a year-over-year basis. And, Bob, I would imagine on Earth 2, where this tariff discussion never took place, maybe the Fed's talking about cutting interest rates sooner rather than later.
Well, maybe if there's a parallel universe, that's happening. But let's understand why this happened. I mean, energy prices fell by 6.1%. And one of the reasons they fell by that much was because of concerns about these tariffs that were coming. And so the tariffs, and if you look at the monthly number, the decline in energy at an annual rate is 53% at an annual rate in March. This is 1 month. So, you know, if you look at the median change in the CPI on the month, the median, excluding energy, went up by 1.4%. So, and over 3 months, you've still got the median inflation rate up 3%, the same as the 6 months, and that's higher than the 12-month pace of 2.8%. So you had some things going on in the month that really affected the numbers, particularly out of the energy complex. And so we're going to have to wait and see what's really happening. The core inflation rate also broke a little bit lower. You know, it rose only 0.7% at an annual rate, only 0.1% on the month. So, but the three-month inflation rates using the core are still stuck at 3% for 3 months and for 6 months, and that's above the 12-month pace of 2.8%. So it's still a pretty uneven report. You know, the headline may be something that you want to cheer about, but once again, it's a case of reading the fine print.
Bob Bruska, Chief Economist, Fact and Opinion Economics in New York.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
C2E2, the Chicago Comic and Entertainment Expo, gets underway tomorrow in McCormick Place. Let's take a look at what's in store with the help of Stephen Fischler, CEO of ComicConnect.com, and Metropolis Comics, the world's largest dealer and auction house for vintage comic books based in New York. Stephen, thank you for joining us today. And before we talk about the show itself, and you are going to be there, Stephen, you're going to have a ComicsConnect.com and Metropolis Comics will have a booth at the show. Let's just talk about the evolution of the comic book show.
The early days of comic book conventions were hardcore fans meeting with the creators that they love so much and sort of buying and selling vintage comic books. It is astounding that the rest of the world has discovered the value of this. So you have movie fans, movie companies, video game publishers, all coming together because of a sort of a shared love of what a comic book is, but they also see it as an incredible opportunity to market their creative ideas, be it a video game concept, a movie, a TV show. It is sort of startling that it has become what it has become. C2E2 is the Midwest version of San Diego Comic-Con. The New York Comic-Con, the convention at the Javits, is the East Coast version. But they're all working together to promote comic books, sci-fi, fantasy, as I would say, a marketing concept.
What is the biggest emerging trend that we're beginning to see at conventions such as C2E2? Is this still about turning comic book intellectual property into movies, or is all the action in video games and interactive experiences?
One company looks at it and says, listen, we have a streaming service. We want the backbone of our streaming service to be comic book content. They're there. You have a video game company that says the sure sign of success is to latch on to a comic book concept. You know, they're going to be there. New publishers that want to create intellectual property, sci-fi, fantasy, superhero, they want to be there. So it's really at the core the comic book concept. And all these different companies, a wide variety of companies, saying this is a place for us to be in order to market our creative vision, our technological services, our publishing company. And it really is astounding that you have all these people twisted together in one or two or three different massive conventions. And they're all obviously finding great success. There's a fan base, there is a marketing opportunity, and there is success.
Stephen Fischler, CEO of ComicConnect.com and Metropolis Comics, based in New York, but he'll be based in Chicago starting this weekend for C2E2. Thank you for joining us today.
Information to make cash and save cash. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
People are watching their retirement accounts shrink in a down stock market, but it's important to remember the long game. Let's try to put things into perspective with the help of Shane Gornick, financial advisor, Forefront Financial Planning in Lyle. The website, Prepare My Retirement retirement.com. Shane, thank you for joining us today. Now, appearing on our show today, how much of this is you just enjoying being on the radio, and how much of this is a brief respite from people calling you, and it just goes to voicemail while we're talking?
A little bit of both, Rob. A little bit of both.
Because I would imagine that we talked about this last week, that your phone's probably ringing off the hook from people who are very concerned about the state of their retirement accounts, and that 90% of your job is talking them down.
Exactly. There's a lot of information out there. There's a lot of volatility happening. And anyone who isn't at least a little concerned, I'd have concerns about them in terms of them recognizing the importance of their retirement accounts and their life savings and the fact that it's exposed to the market. But that being said, when things are great, it's not always as good as it seems. When things are bad, it's not always as bad as it seems. And ultimately, we recommend staying a steady course. Now, it doesn't mean you shouldn't ever make changes, but it is something we certainly want to help prevent people from making rash decisions based on a short-term bit of news that they get over the course of the day.
Now, if you are experiencing some 401k anxiety, I mean, there are things that you can control and there are things that you cannot control, and you cannot control the stock market as much as we like to think that we do. So why not channel that nervous energy and that anxiety into fixing some of the things you can control, like your own financial well-being, or maybe seeing how things are going at work?
Rob, that's a great point. One of the things that we'll talk to clients about is, especially with your 401k, you can check it every 5 minutes if you want at work. At the end of the day, the information that you learn from checking it, what action are you actually going to take? Do you know what action you're going to take and what you're going to buy or what you're going to sell based on that information? And if you're not sure what you would do in that situation, what's the point of getting that information every 5 minutes in the first place? In the meantime, employers across the U.S. are concerned, and the economy is slowing. And something that you do have control over, that you have a direct impact on, is your own career. And so while companies may potentially be considering headcount or who belongs in which role, they're going to be very interested in how employees are performing. And so using this as an opportunity when employers are also worried and taking a little bit more control and a proactive approach in your own career can really help set you apart from others and give you a bit more control on something that will really affect you directly from a financial standpoint.
In other words, be the best you can be. Shane Gornick, financial advisor, Forefront Financial Planning in Lyle. Find him online, preparemyretirement.com. Thank you for joining us today. Still ahead in Technology Thursday, erasing a digital legacy you may not want to leave behind.
This is Chicago's news, traffic, and weather station, News Radio 105.9. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. House Republicans forward the framework for the next federal budget. Fans of Harry Potter have a new must-see destination in Chicago. In Technology Thursday, tracking your digital footprint and making sure it's not doing you harm. Also on the tech front, employee monitoring is becoming more mainstream and more thorough. WBBM Business. The markets are lower. The Dow is down 3.7% or 1,500 points. The NASDAQ is down 5.25% or 899 points. And the S&P 500 is down 4.5% or 248 points. We have 42 degrees right now in Chicago under cloudy skies. It's 12:31. Topping our news at the half hour. House Republicans have narrowly approved their budget framework. The 216 to 214 vote was a turnaround for Speaker Mike Johnson after abruptly postponing a vote scheduled for last night. Johnson worked to satisfy conservative lawmakers who refused to support the plan. He and Senate Majority Leader John Thune assured them they're on track to seek at least $1.5 trillion in spending cuts. Muggles from around the wizarding world have descended on Chicago's Magnificent Mile today for the opening of the new Harry Potter store. The butterbeer is flowing, and there's exclusive Chicago-themed merchandise for fans of the series. The Harry Potter store is located at Michigan and Huron below the Omni Hotel. WBBM News Time, 12:31. The noon business hour continues. Stocks are trading sharply lower this afternoon. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, we welcome in Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services. Find him online, horizoninvestment.com. Chuck, thank you for joining us today. And let's talk about the behavior of the markets over the last 24 hours. One day ago at this time, we were talking about the very beginning of that relief rally when the White House announced that those tariffs that were rolled out last week will be paused on most countries for the next 90 days. And now we have a sell-off today. What is going on here outside of a reaction maybe to a classic relief rally?
Well, I think that's part of it. I think the other part is the continued tug of war here that we're seeing in the market from those that kind of exclusively blame tariffs for the market's volatility and downward action prior to yesterday, and others, and I kind of fall in that camp, that think that there may be more to the decline in the market than just tariffs. And you know, that has been my, I guess, my biggest fear is that, you know, once the tariff issue got resolved, or at least got delayed, we'd get a true read on this market and what's under the hood in terms of affecting it. And I think there's more to the possible downside in this market than just tariffs. And oftentimes we don't know what that is until after the fact, but I'm always nervous ascribing the market moves to a single data point. And that's what has been happening, and I think that's a bit dangerous here.
And also, there's just other things going on in the markets as a whole outside of equities, because we do have the VIX shooting back towards 50, pretty much back to where it was yesterday before the big rally began. And also, the bond market, the 10-year yield, also behaving out of the ordinary. So how do you put all of these pieces together to create a more complete picture of what's going on?
Yeah, well, and that's the other thing that's difficult, right? You've got a bond market that by, you know, all expectations should be heading down and heading down fairly substantially, and yet you had this significant bounce in the 10-year. And it's off a little bit today, but it had gone up, what, 30, 40 basis points in a matter of a few days. And that's, you know, that's just one more issue. When you see that kind of weirdness in the bond market, for lack of a better term, and, you know, is that signaling potential stress in the financial system? And that's not good for the market. So, as you say, there's other things going on here other than just, you know, the tariff situation. You know, the other thing is it's the timing of all this as we move into corporate earnings season here coming up later this week, but especially starting to come in the next few weeks. And, you know, what does that hold? I mean, it's going to be very difficult for companies to provide any kind of significant guidance on their earnings, you know, for the remainder of this year, because there's so much uncertainty around tariffs and everything else. And I think, you know, the earnings quarter is really going to be telling for the market and how investors respond to that. And that this uncertainty is going to continue, and we're probably going to continue to have days like we're having today.
One piece of analysis that cropped up a couple of times yesterday about why the White House may have done the about face, as they said, was that the bond vigilantes were out there and they are undefeated. So who are the bond vigilantes, for those of us who are not in the know, and why are they batting 1,000?
Well, there's always been this, you know, argument that what drives everything is the bond vigilantes and the bond market. And, you know, I think that bond market is an extension of, you know, the financial structure and the company and the country. And when you see bonds behaving that way, that is a concern. And also, too, you know, from the government standpoint, you know, there's a ton of refinancing of government debt that's coming due in June. And so thus, they're watching that bond market pretty closely, because if you know, yields rise on those 10 years and 5 years and 30 years, if yields are going up substantially, that's going to increase basically the carrying costs of debt in this country. So, you know, what the bond vigilantes don't want is the interest rates going significantly higher, because that's going to throw a monkey wrench in a lot of things. And so that's why they bet 1,000, because they matter and maybe matter the most.
Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services. Find him online, horizoninvestment.com. Thank you for joining us today.
Compounding your interest with an economy of words. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's Technology Thursday. You may not realize just how vast your digital footprint really is, and it can outlive you. Let's talk about how to manage that trail after you're gone with Bill Ulivieri, owner of Senecal Capital Management in Glenview, the website senecalcapital.com. Bill, thank you for joining us today, and I'm sure you are familiar with this phenomenon. I know I am. The Facebook birthday section, and it encourages you to wish happy birthday to someone who stopped celebrating birthdays several years ago. And that's just one piece of your digital footprint that will exist long after you're gone.
Yeah, Rob, it's funny that you mentioned that. But funny, like sad, because I've had several friends pass away in the last few years, and like you, I see their birthday reminders and wonderful things on LinkedIn and on Facebook, and it's a little sad, but I have to tell you, I came up with the ultimate hack to solve this problem of social media, how it lives on longer than we do. And so the problem is this, Rob, I joke around saying, I wonder what is that part of my brain that used to store my username and passwords is doing today? Because everything happens on my Google Chrome browser. It automatically remembers my username and password. And according to an internet search, most people have between 80 and 100 username and passwords. How are you going to keep track of all that? On like Post-it notes? No. Here's the ultimate hack that we can leave our heirs, we can leave our estate planning attorneys, or we can leave it in like a legacy document for our beneficiaries. And that is, you can export your username and passwords into an Excel spreadsheet using the Google Chrome browser. And you can do it also with Mozilla and the Microsoft Edge browser. So I thought that I had maybe 80, maybe 90 username and passwords. I just did my download right now when I was calling, when I was waiting online. I have 355 username and passwords. Like, I can't, there's no way I can keep that on a piece of paper or on a legal pad. So download and export all your username and passwords, copy it to a USB stick, and then secure it with an encryption that's available for free on Microsoft. In this way, when you hand this over into your legacy document to your estate planning attorney or even the loved ones, it's just a one-click open up, and they have access to all your username and passwords and can cancel and remove and disable your social media accounts, your bank accounts, your phone, everything.
Because I think the real issue, I mean, outside of just your Facebook account reminding people of your birthday in perpetuity or other social media applications, it's probably a good idea just to have a loved one in charge of email access and other bank account access. Because even if you're dead and the account is largely inactive, someone somewhere could find a way to retrieve the personal information of the living via the decedent's account.
Yeah, that's true. And honestly, that's a hard part because, usually when I, part of my password management skills is to read my password all the time. And I'll be married almost 40 years, and I'm not going to give my wife my username and password to my emails either. So yeah, you do have to find a trusted individual. But it's not just the security of having it, Rob. We have to figure out a way of updating it and maintaining it. And that's the hard part. It's the fact that we are suggested. It's a good practice to change your email and your username and passwords every 6 months, 9 months, like you change the battery in your smoke detector. That's a moving target. It's very, very difficult for our loved ones to manage. And yes, we can make them a legacy contact. We put them in charge. But ultimately, we need to have a document that they can open up. And it's encrypted and safe, but a way of getting at least 80% of them done. And I don't see any other way of doing that other than, again, copying your username and passwords, exporting them to a secure, encrypted key, and then, again, handing that over to a loved one that you can trust.
And very quickly, Bill, are we at the point where any estate planning attorney, when you're having that conversation, like that should be automatically part of the discussion, along with all of the other stuff you need to have together when discussing your estate after you pass?
You know, it's probably a good idea to have the conversation with the estate planning attorney, but let's be honest, how often do we meet with those kind of people? Maybe once a year, once every 5 years. It's probably good to have that device recognized and mentioned, but I can't actually say it's going to be an optimal solution to having all that information with a third party like that. It's got to be someone that you love and trust nearby, friend or family, someone you really, you know, that person you call in the middle of the night when you're in trouble. Like that's probably who should have that information on hand. So they can update your Facebook. They can take down your LinkedIn. They can store all your networking, your connections, because maybe that information might be important to have down the road.
Bill Ulivieri, owner of Senecal Capital Management in Glenview, thank you for joining us today.
It's 60 Minutes of Financial Planning. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Technology Thursday rolls on. In this segment, we're updating the methods employers are using to monitor the activities of their workers. We welcome in Michelle Reisdorf, Chicago jobs expert with the Robert Half Company in Chicago. Michelle, thank you for joining us today. And it seems like for the longest time, it was assumed that if you are working on company computers, if you have a company laptop, if you have a company phone, it is the company's right to see what you are doing with them. But that just scratches the surface of employee surveillance technology.
Well, it definitely, you know, there are more and more technology and tools available today. And while I'm no technology, you know, monitoring tools expert, yes, you should assume that you need to respect all the tools given to you, whether in the workplace or, you know, working in a hybrid situation at home.
Now, when you go into a new job, is the technology monitoring scenario or situation that's in place, should that be part of your due diligence?
Well, I think what you should make sure is that you understand all the tools that you are given and what the rules are around using those tools. And, you know, certainly you can, as part of taking the job or, you know, any position, et cetera, talk with the HR team or your HR departments to understand kind of what the rules are around tool usage and monitoring.
And then this one thing you should probably check into, and this is goes into a much larger conversation about, and we actually have legislation in parts of the country and in parts of the world about when work hours begin or end. But you should probably check in with your supervisor at your company about expectations, about when you were officially on the clock and off the clock, so you're not getting dinged for not doing work activities when you're officially off the clock.
Absolutely, Rob. That's a really great point. You know, as more and more employees are craving more and more flexibility nowadays, that standard 8 to 5 has, you know, become a 7 to 4 or 6 to 3 or even working later into the evening. And so really, you know, kind of understanding what your hours are and sticking to those, you know, setting some boundaries, but sticking to those makes that process between you and the employer much easier.
And then use your personal devices wisely. I think we talked about at the beginning of the segment that there's an expectation of that what you do on a company computer or a company phone is that is not necessarily yours. That belongs to the company, too. And they can keep an eye on what you're doing with that. I mean, I had a friend who worked on Capitol Hill, and he had a personal phone and a Congress phone. And the Congress phone, there were strict rules about what you could do with the Congress phone. So I think that's something that everybody is, you know, familiar with these days.
Absolutely. We see more and more people carrying dual devices. And, you know, again, it goes back to my point of respect the tools that you're giving, keep personal activity off of work devices. And that will not only protect your privacy, but, you know, show that you have respect for your company as well.
Michelle Reisdorf, Chicago jobs expert with the Robert Half Company in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today.